Ho 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 and merry jingly slashers and survivor girls. We back from the holidays. I'm Mistress Meg.
I'm good buddy Lunchbox.
And we hope everybody had a super spectacular holiday regardless of what you celebrate, or just a decent winter break if you don't celebrate anything. But we are back in the new year. We took last week off because I was sick and just beat up from the holidays. I did so much running around over the course of 2 weeks that the thought of sitting down and recording a podcast just made me sleepy. So we
see. I did my due diligence and I watched my movie, which we'll talk about.
It's right. Yeah, but I hear you.
I did my part.
I couldn't do it. I wanted to. But before
what is the in the words of the principal in Back to the Future? Slacker.
Anyway. Thank you so much for joining us. Hit that subscribe button and we'll drop in your favorite podcatcher on Tuesdays. Join us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram at creepinitreal, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. And email creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. We have a decent schedule going, but we always have room for more stuff. So if you have a movie suggestion, you can email us there. And we still have merch, Catching After Christmas sale at creepinitreal.redbubble.com for a t-shirt or a notebook or whatever your little nerdy heart desires.
Cat mat. Yeah. It's a mat that you put under your cat's food dish so that it doesn't get messy, but it's got Lunchbox art on it.
Cool.
I'm Lunchbox, by the way, if you didn't know.
He's the guy that does the art.
And I like Jaws.
He does the back end stuff. I do the front end stuff.
Yeah.
And,
swimming with bow-legged women and all, you know.
Don't. We're gonna get... NBC Universal are vicious. We're gonna get struck down, sir.
Man, I'm still salty about that. Really bad. Like, that is... I had a really good idea about a shirt, and... bastards.
I have a workaround for that, but that's your fault.
Yeah, don't put in the tags.
Yeah, you don't listen to me. Anywho, we're back, and, I had an idea that I had wanted to do, but again, because I was sick all last week, was not able to get out to do it.
Yeah, and then I had an idea, and then you just didn't want to do it. So I was like, oh, now we have a third idea.
So, the Mexican standoff concluded in a compromise. So I actually wanted to do another timely one and do Megan. So it came out last week, or well, when this drops, it'll probably be about close to 2 weeks now. I've been looking forward to seeing it since I saw the trailer a few months ago.
And I've heard it's a banger. It's a good one. So we will. Yeah. We will get to it.
We'll get there. It was supposed to be a timely episode, one of those spoilery ones. But I got laid out with some weird... It wasn't COVID. It wasn't the flu. It might have been just a bad cold. I just felt like shit all last week, so I wasn't able to get out and go to the movies because I actually called out sick that day.
It's almost like the theme park sick, like so.
The mouse flu.
Yeah, the mouse flu. Yeah,
or con crud if you've ever been to a convention. So if you've ever been to a convention, you know how when you're done 2 or 3 days later, you just start feeling real crappy because you were just around 10,000 people breathing in all of their germs.
You just gotta stop licking the doorknobs.
Don't tell me how to live my life. God damn. How dare you?
I'm sorry. Didn't mean it.
We are not married anymore. Mm. You are not the boss of
me, sir. Go lick all the doorknobs you want.
Thank you.
And the handrails.
I don't need your permission. Yeah. I do what I want.
There's free gum underneath the rails. Just go for it.
I know. I mean, is there?
That's where I get mine.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm on a budget.
Same. Same. It's snug. What was your idea, though, instead of Megan? I forgot.
Okay, so the first initial idea was Megan. Like, that was going to be the first brand new horror film of the year.
Yeah.
In theaters, and we figured go out with a bang, and since your name is Megan, it just kind of all tied in nicely. And we were very curious with it because she looks like an Olsen twin.
That was a weird one, yeah.
Bred into, like, Chucky and, like, all the... And we're pretty keen on our killer doll movies.
Child's Play is one of my favorites.
Yeah, so it's like... I was like, okay, I'm with it. So then it turned out we're not going to be able to go out. We're going to have to pick something else. So I decided that I wanted to go with something that was on my list for a while now. However, I didn't know what kind of mood you would be in. So I picked first In the Tall Grass. It was a Stephen King and his son. It was a story but known by them, straight to Netflix. Looks super interesting. If anybody's actually seen it, hey, tell me how it is. Like, I'll probably end up watching it a little bit later on. But we ended up picking Eat Local. And it's a vampire film of the British sorts. And
it starred Freema. Yeah. I was kind of into the idea because it starred Freema Agyeman. If you're a Doctor Who fan, Martha. Mm-hmm. And I thought
Martha Jones
as a vampire could be an interesting one.
And that one, I don't know. It's like, as I watched it, it's like, yes, it dealt with vampires and there were some killings, but it didn't feel like a straight up horror movie. Like Tucker and Dale versus Evil felt more of like a horror movie than what mm-hmm. this did. It went around a whole bunch of like vampires. They are the leaders of their territories, and every like 100 years, they all get together and they have a meeting to discuss, topics and situations and how things are running and making sure that they're not overeating and all. It's all this stuff.
It's vampire politics.
Yeah, and then it turns out that there is a military group that knows exactly what they are, and they are out to stop them. So they're all the vampires are in this farmhouse. The military shows up and it's just chaos and it's just them fighting. There's one little, this little 80-year-old lady who's a vampire. She is so adorable and such a badass. Like, it's like to see this 80-year-old woman with like this like machine gun is just so badass. Like, bonkers. It is like. I say Sarah Connor's is like my end all be all, like
Sarah Connor's granny.
Oh my god! Like, this is just so good. But then also for Doctor Who fans, if you are a fan of the Vincent Van Gogh episode, which is one of my absolute favorites,
oh, it's a tearjerker.
Vincent's actually one of the vampires.
Actually think he was an underworld. He was one of the vampires in Underworld, too.
So, it's definitely, it's very enjoyable, super funny, but I was like, I don't feel like it was, like, a straight-up horror.
Right, you felt like it was more of a comedy situation there?
Yeah, highly recommend, but for the podcast, maybe we'll do that for, like, a comedy, comedy month down the road. Right. So
yeah. In the most roundabout sort of way, we're getting to the point here, guys. I'm
trying to fill some time there, kids.
We still stuck to the idea of doing a relatively new movie. So this week we did The Menu. So heads up, this movie came out very recently. So if you have not seen it and you decide to go ahead anyway, you've been warned of the Tharby spoilers ahead.
Or if you really want to watch the movie first, you can watch it on HBO Max.
Go watch it, then come back and hang out with us while we talk about it, if you like. We won't be mad at you if that's the way you want to go. But you have been warned going forth from here on out. It's going to be so spoilery.
But yeah, that was the thing, was like, I wanted to pick like another new movie. And what's hilarious is that I was just like on this Big Bang Theory kick again, where it's like just rewatching all that, and then it's like Black Adam popped up, so I was like, okay, I'll watch Black Adam. And then it's like, oh, like, what other new movies have I not dove into? I was like, oh, The Menu. I was like, oh, there it is. That's what we're gonna do.
So The Menu came out on November 18th, 2022. This is your last warning that there are spoilers if you have not seen it. It was made for a budget of about $35 million. It ended up grossing about $76.2 million worldwide. This thing was a kind of small release. It really didn't get a ton of theaters, but it made back double its budget, so yay for that. It was written by Seth Rees and Will Tracy. It was directed by Mark Mylod. Oh, Samsonite.
I was going to say, like, if you, like, swap everyone's name up to a food, I'm going to just lose it.
No. It's spelling. This one stars Ralph Fiennes as Chef Slowick, Anya Taylor-Joy as Margot, Nicholas Hoult as Tyler, Hong Chow as Elsa, Janet McTeer as Lillian, Paul Adelston as Ted, John Leguizamo as the movie star, what was his name? Damien Cortez, I think. Amy Carrero as Felicity, Reed Burney as Richard, Judith Light as Anne, and if you don't remember who that is, us 80s babies remember her from Who's the Boss.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca Kuhn as Linda, Rob Yang as Bryce, Arturo Castro as Soren, Mark St. Cyr as Dave. In a small role is Peter Gross as a sommelier. He is a character actor. He pops up in a bazillion different things. Christina Bricado as Catherine. And I think those are the only ones really worth noting. Everyone else is kind of a bit part.
Yeah, I try to go back and see if there's any Easter egg-y kind of stuff.
Not really.
Yeah, and I was like, I enjoy that they made it just more of a focus where you're not, because, and again, the MCU has just ruined us. Like, where it's like, you're not watching the movie to watch the movie
anymore.
No,
you're looking for shit.
Yeah, you're watching all of it for all the Easter eggs, and it's like a...
Yeah, well, the MCU's kind of ruined itself at this point, so, we can just kind of...
Yeah.
I'm ready to move on from that nonsense. So, I had actually considered putting this movie on the schedule shortly after it had come out, but looking at the trailer, I couldn't really tell what this was. Like, it kind of read horror to me, but it also kind of just read as, like, a drama or a black comedy. It's actually billed as a black comedy.
And I didn't, because I saw it, when I first saw the trailer, I got horror movie right away.
Yeah, there's a vibe there, yeah. But then I started seeing a couple of the reviews and a couple of clips, and I was like, oh, so this is funny?
So,
like,
I came across a review while I was watching it.
Oh, really?
And it was, it's like the black comedy. I was like, and the whole time I'm like, this isn't funny. Like, I don't get like a dark black, I will say that there are like some maybe comical bits, but it's more of like, you're not laughing at it. You're like, like, it's almost like I'm going back to Big Bang Theory with the Sheldon's, the like the little, like, it's just like you kind of give a little smirk. Like, it's not like
I actually disagree with that. I got a few chuckles. I had some lulls, yeah. But I'm not normal. I'm not okay. So I am the first to admit that I might be a little twisty.
I mean, so I'm twisted too, but it's just
no,
like,
you're not. Not comparatively. You've met my mother.
And?
It's genetic.
Yeah, anyways.
We're not okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, God, I mean, anyways. So, as I'm watching it, I was getting more Midsommar vibes than anything out of this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, it falls deeply within that horror category, but it's very... It keeps with that sophistication really well.
Yeah, I don't... A lot of people kick around the term elevated horror to describe these sort of next-level things that go beyond slashers. This is definitely in the vein of, like, Silence of the Lambs and stuff, where it makes you think. It's a more psychological, it's a bit more of a thriller than, like, straight-up horror film. There's only a little bit of gore. You can't even really go to this one for the blood and the guts.
No.
Because there's not a lot of it. There's a bit. So while the filmmakers were super conservative with the amount of blood used, they made it count when it did happen. It wasn't gratuitous by any stretch, which I actually kind of, to a point, I appreciated, because this movie knew what it was. The filmmakers knew what they were making, and they really, really stuck to it, and they were really good at it. I think that they stuck the landing pretty well. The couple of examples where they did use a bit of blood, there's the one scene where Rafe Fiennes gets stabbed in the leg. It's just a little bit of blood.
I love that you're holding scissors talking about this. The point.
I had to cut a thread off my pillow.
Are you kidding me?
It was bugging me. It was just dangling there.
We'll talk about that, but yeah, Rufus gets stabbed in the leg.
Shut up. Leave me alone. I told you. I'm not okay.
Good night.
But he got stabbed in the leg by one of his sous chefs, and he's wearing black chef pants. You can't see the blood until the sous chef takes her hand, Catherine, and rubs it on his chest and kind of like just does a smear of blood across a chef coat. That's really the only time, like, you're gonna see that there. It was kind of just to make a point. It had enough of an ick factor without being too over the top for you to be like,
Yeah, they took a lot of the stuff that was really meant for you to go, oh, holy shit, and then, like, it stuck. And there was a lot of...
They made it all count.
Yes.
Which I appreciate. It was well thought out, and it counted.
And there are movies where they try to do that and then it just falls flat.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was the one thing that I definitely appreciated with this film, is that the pacing of it, even though it is a little bit of a slower pace, it kept with its roller coaster stuff, but it wasn't like
it was a consistent pace and it was a very slow build.
Yeah.
There was a couple points towards the end of the first act where I was kind of like, where's this going?
Yeah.
I couldn't, because it's not obvious where this thing is going at all.
But at the end, then that starts to make sense.
Oh, for sure.
And that was the beautiful thing about all of that. Once you understand what this is and what is happening, mm-hmm. everything in the beginning, because there's a lot in the beginning that's just like, oh, I really don't care about this. But it's meant for you to act like that. Because we're not those people.
And we're not privy to what's going on. It yeah. looks like a pretentious restaurant visit. Okay. $1,250 a plate. And it kind of makes fun of those over-the-top foodie types. The ones that think they can tell the difference between different types of red wine. You can't tell the difference.
I drink box wine.
It's making fun of... And I love to cook. And I grew up in a culinary household. One of my uncles is a trained chef. Like, there's... I did 2 years of culinary school myself. So, like, I get a lot of the stuff that's going on. And I understood what they were doing. But I have always maintained that, yes, there's an artistry to it. And I can appreciate that when people are doing all these amazing things with, like, foam and freeze drying and sculpting foods into certain things and making these itty bitty portions count with these big bursts of flavor and stuff like that. I was like, but there's also, it's like, I can appreciate that, but really what most people just want is a well-cooked steak and like a good cut of meat and like a nice, like, well-made macaroni and cheese. Like, we don't generally, those things mean a lot more than like the over the top, like the one with the bread, the breadless bread plate.
Yeah, we'll talk about it here in just a sec, because I want to get into like the players of the whole gimmick. But yes, that whole thing drove me just bananas.
It was very clearly taking the piss.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Out of those pretentious, high-end, $500 a plate, $1,200 a plate restaurants, where they're just sort of like you... Because you get one sea scallop on a rock with a little bit of seaweed on it, and it's like, ooh, this is some... And there's always some stupid, over-the-top, convoluted story to go with it.
I'm sorry. I remember... So, my family, we have these big... Well... Before COVID really hit, we used to have like really massive family reunions, and they were so big that one of the family members would go out and he would take up a collection so that he could go to buy a whole pig that was the thing, is like my southern mind goes, okay, I could spend $1,250 on bullshit.
Yeah, or you
or
can
art.
Or
it's
you
like,
can
go
kick
get a, like,
or
barbecue.
You can kick Bubba J $20 to go get a pig. Like,
yeah.
What?
And it's like, yeah, and it's like doing that thing where it's like having that home cooked. Yeah, I mean, it's just that Americanized, just overeating, and it's just...
Well, it doesn't even have to be overeating.
Know.
Like, there's an artistry in the simple things can have an artistry to them, too.
Grandmother's cooking is more of an art form than what I saw on, mm-hmm. on the screen.
Yep.
And it's just, like, there's just something more about... And they kind of tie into this later on in the movie, and... It works beautifully. It's a very, very beautiful moment, but it's just funny. The whole time I'm going, like, my southern brain is just like, there ain't no goddamn way I ain't spending that, my good hard-earned money on some bullshit art of that. Mm-mm. Not gonna happen. Nope.
No, sir. I don't like it.
No.
Yeah, I couldn't bring myself to do that, because you know what the worst part about all those is? This. So, the dinner, the quote-unquote dinner, started at 8 o'clock, and Elsa, the concierge through the whole thing, she was the tour guide, and she's the one who kind of ran the front of the house.
She was terrifying.
She was scary as fuck.
Oh my god, she was terrifying.
But she mentioned that the dinner, quote-unquote dinner, ran for like 4.5 hours. You weren't leaving that restaurant till after 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, that is akin to torture in my mind to know that I can't go anywhere. And you know what the worst part about that is? Not just the torturous thing. I would leave hungry. Like, there's no way I would be full at the end of whatever that was.
Well, and that was the thing was, when they arrive at the dinner party, I guess you could call it, when they sit down to eat, what's his name? It's Sol
Slowick.
Slowick. So Slowick comes in and he says, "Do not eat."
Mm-hmm.
It's like eating is the worst thing you could possibly do for the quality of food that is about to be given to you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you have to take it in. Like, what was the word that he used? It was,
he's like, you need to taste it, savor it, experience it.
It's, eating it doesn't work as well. Like, it's not what you need to do.
Well, because eating implies you're just putting in food for fuel.
Yeah.
That's it. But for him, he's like, he wanted to make this big, elaborate experience with storytelling and all this other bullshit on top of it. And no wonder that he became this soulless husk of a chef. Like, he sucked all of the love and personality out of what he was doing to be as pretentious and over the top as possible.
Yeah. Because everybody was making him out to be that way.
Uh-huh.
And
everybody was sucking his dick, so he felt like he had to live up to that.
Yeah, and that's the thing where it's like, when you have these chefs that are just above and beyond, and not only chefs, but like, I mean, chefs are pretty much on point for that type of way of thinking, but it's like, when you go into like any type of art form, and you are at this high level, and people put you at this high level, and then you have to keep up with that high level, and it's just like it just keeps on going, and I love that.
Well,
he
was trying to be like the Andy Warhol of food,
yeah,
where he was trying to elevate it to this high art form, and ultimately it's still a Campbell soup can.
Yeah, it's like there's no way.
It's
like
still food,
he's
dude.
Constantly gonna go, and I actually love that Slowick was just like, he realized, he's like, shit, this is what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those, what was it?
Which is why he was on this weird suicide mission.
Yeah, well, there was this, there was a song, oh God, it was some rap song, I forget the rapper, but he talks about that where it's, he starts up with, I push, I push, I push, I get all these monies and friends, and then all of a sudden, he's like, I should have just stayed home with my mac and cheese. Like, it was just like...
It was Mace. He said, more money, more problems.
Well, yeah, yes, more money, more problems. But that is the thing, was the whole premise of the story was this guy just, he works and works and works and works, and all he really needed was just his wife and kid at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and,
you know.
And you saw that when Margot broke into Slowick's main living quarters, and she saw there was a picture. He was married with a child at one point, and that was gone. He sacrificed fucking everything to live up to this bullshit reputation. And one of the pictures that Margot saw where he was the happiest was him. He got
all of his accolades is him not smiling, not
except for one, which was he was employee of the month at Hamburger Howie's, and he was smiling, and it made him, it brought more joy to him. And that was when he was a rookie cook.
I love the Hamburger House, like the burger boy, like the, or the, like the big boy type thing.
Yeah, so he just, like, but he was so happy, and that was what ended up saving Margot in the end, because she put that out there. That's how she saved herself.
I love that she took her initial idea at the beginning of the movie, and that is what saved her at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. I was like, that was really good.
Yep.
Because Tyler stopped her because she was going to send her food back.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up, like,
Well, because Tyler, fucking twit, he was terrible. I love Nicholas Holt. I think he's a fantastic actor.
Oh, he's great.
He's such a good actor.
As Beast? Oh, my God.
This character was, tough one. he wanted to be with the in crowd so badly that, like, he was learning the lingo and he was using the tools and he wanted to be in. He'd been corresponding with Slowick when he booked this table, and, like, he just wanted to be in so bad that he was try hard. And every time Margot was like, this is kind of stupid, he was like, how dare you? You just don't get it. It was terrible. Well,
and that was the thing was, so when we're, like, they are the first, they're the first people that we get to meet in this film.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the dock, and they're waiting for the boat, and Tyler's standing there, and he turns around, and he sees Margot, she's lighting up a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
So he runs over to her and he's like, oh, you gotta stop. Like, you can't, you're gonna ruin your palate. It's like, you're not gonna be able to taste your food and everything else. And she just kind of, like, has this, like, I don't understand kind of.
Well, and they came across, were introduced to them as if they're a couple.
Yeah.
And then slowly what ends up happening is that whole idea comes unraveled. And that's what the menu does really well, is it takes your initial ideas that you form at the beginning of the movie about each of these characters and this scenario that they're going into, and it slowly starts to pull the thread on it. So it is, you're, by the time you realize that the thread's been pulled and it's nothing like what you thought, you're naked.
Yeah.
It does a great job of doing that, so that by the end of the movie, you're like, you're just sitting back with your every expectation you had going into the first few minutes of this movie being completely subverted.
And what was interesting was that Margot kind of goes, all right, that's fine. And she just goes with it. And then she starts.
She seems like a reluctant girlfriend at the beginning.
Yeah. But it's one of those. And again, I bring up Big Bang Theory. But it's very much like a Leonard and Penny situation where it's like Leonard has these, just all this knowledge about these certain topics,
mm-hmm.
and he will explain it to her, and she just will not understand or doesn't give a shit about technical terminology.
Right, she's listening just to entertain him.
Yeah, and it's just like, and that's kind of how it was at the beginning. And then she even asked him, it's like, oh, well, how much was this dinner? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, $12.50. And she's like, oh, my God. She's like, okay, I guess I'll go in with it since you paid this much for. It's like, if you love this guy so much and you are just such a diehard, she's like, I guess we'll go. And one thing that I thought was really awesome was when they sat down, the actress, I forget her name,
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Anya. They actually sat everybody down to where she was at the sides. but she rotated the chair so that her back was to Slowik the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like it was like a disrespectful, like, because she didn't care, and it was just one of those things where it's like, but during the filming,
it was subtle.
Yeah, during the filming though, she's like, it kind of sucked because every time like Ray would like walk over to her, she had to like twist in this like weird S shape to like turn and then look up at him, and she's like doing that every single day. I had to go to the chiropractor because it was
annoying. Yeah.
But I love that little subtle, just like she didn't care about it, where
Mm-mm.
Tyler was all about it. It's like he just wanted to just look at Slowik the entire time. He didn't want to take his eyes off of him.
Well, and when Slowik singled her out because she was not on the guest list, she was taking the place of Tyler's girlfriend who dumped him. And so
I want to know why she dumped him.
Because he's a prick. The way he treated Margot, I would have dumped his ass too. I wouldn't be sticking around with a guy like that. Fuck that. So it looks like Margot is the new girlfriend. Like maybe he booked this several months ago and whatever. Come to find out, she's an escort. He hired her to come with.
Yeah, it turned out where, and we actually come to find out from Slowik. Slowik, in the like towards the middle of the movie, brings her into the office, and he's like, "Oh, like you're in the service industry,"
which really pisses Tyler off because he kept because Margot was the variable. She was the unexpected twist in the otherwise quote unquote perfect menu, which is what he was trying to do when he was about to burn this fucking building down, was create the absolute perfect menu to end this on. But she was the wild card, and he was trying to figure out what to do with her. Like, you have to have a place. And he kept coming back to her, like, obsessively coming back to her. He also noticed she wasn't eating, and Tyler was like, what the fuck? Like, I want him to notice me. Why does he keep talking to you?
Yeah. Oh, use a hoe.
I mean, yeah.
Use a hoe.
But what was funny was when Slowik asked her, it's like, you know, you and I are both in the service industry. I'm like, something like that.
Yeah.
You and I are both in the service industry. Do you still get any joy out of this? And she said, I used to. And he went, me too. And they had that moment of understanding and that moment of connection, which I think is ultimately what ended up saving her and saving him, kind of, at the end of it.
He definitely had a... it was a connection because of the way that she was treating him. Because everybody treats him with this respect and the...
It's like, well, he's a rock star, and nobody wants to piss off the rock star. So that was a whole thing. She didn't give a fuck. She was like, your food sucks and I'm hungry.
Yeah. And that was the thing was... we'll talk about the meals here, but the infamous bread scene is...
The breadless bread plate?
Yeah. So once they got into that and a chef comes over and, it was like they break a glass, which also notably, it took them 2 weeks to like dial in that scene perfectly.
Oh God, we have a David Fincher wannabe.
Yeah. So they were breaking glass and they had to clean up and they do all this stuff. There's a little squeak from Morgan that they caught like right at the tail end, but it's like it was just a lot of that. And then like they had to like work on the glass breaking sound for like 2 weeks, which is ridiculous, but it works. So after the glass breaks and then Tyler thinks that, oh no, I've ruined the meal, or I'm so sorry, chef's going to come over and yell at me because I broke the glass. Mm-hmm. And then chef comes over and he just starts chirping in on Morgan. It's like, well, why aren't you eating? Like, you're not eating anything. Like, it's just...
She's like, I don't want to.
Yeah, and it's... You're talking... Again, she's not in that mode of knowing who the hell Slowik is. He's like, he's just another dude. It doesn't...
Yeah, because she doesn't run in that circle.
Yeah.
At all. That's not her bag, because she's an escort. She's too pretty to be a hooker. Yeah. She's an escort. She's a high price escort is really what we've got going on here. And, but yeah, that's not her thing. So she doesn't know who he is, nor does she care. But I think that's what also deepened the connection between Margo and Slowik is because...
I kept saying Morgan.
It's Margo. Margo.
Margo, I'm an idiot.
Actually, her real name is Erin, and she's from Boston, not Nebraska. So she was even going under an alias to try to be, like, some white-bread, corn-fed girl.
And Slowik was, like, he called her out. He's like, you're not a Margo. He's like, I've known many Margos. You're not a Margo. No. Like, she's like, the fuck does that matter?
I mean, it was very perceptive. She was an Irish girl, probably from South Boston, who was putting on the accent.
And yeah.
The whole bit, trying to be quote-unquote normal. But she, by her rejecting his food when he was so used to every single person stroking his ego, being a yes man, whether they meant it or not, to have that one person finally kind of shake the apple cart up and go, no, this sucks, I don't want it. It rattled his cage, and it really did something to him. And I think even though he ultimately, Slowik ultimately went through with his plan, he got a little bit of joy out of it, out of his one, like, squeezed the tiniest bit of joy out of his life because of that right before he ended it.
Yeah. And that was something, too, that was very interesting and a little refreshing. Where he flat out told everybody what he was going to do.
Not at first.
I mean, they don't know how he was going to do it, but he's like, nah, you guys are all gone.
No, most, most of the people in that dining room did not know. The only one who knew before even getting on that island, getting to Hawthorne, was Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
Because Tyler was emailing Slowik back and forth, and he was told very specifically, this is what's going to happen. You're going to become part of the perfect menu, and you are going to die.
Oh, yeah. And Tyler was like, cool, I'm in.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But that was another thing was, like, so when he got her to, like, he brought her into the kitchen, and Tyler got all butthurt about it. Yeah. She, like, he's going on about the whole, you know, name thing, and just they're arguing back and forth, and then she's like, oh, what does this mean? I'm gonna die. And he's like, oh, we're all gonna die.
What I really particularly so liked,
what?
What I really liked though was when it came to, once you're getting to the end of the second act and you're starting to cruise into the third, and you start getting the big reveal about every single one of the characters in that dining room, and what Slowik's grievances were against them.
Oh, so good.
And how they were all kind of interconnected, like an Agatha Christie novel type of deal. He gets to Tyler, and it's because he was a know-it-all sycophant. And so he calls him out, and he goes, so your girlfriend dumped you, right? And you invited this woman along. Why did you invite her? He's like, well, Tyler explained that you don't have solo diners. It has to be at least a couple. So I had to bring someone else. He's like, so you brought this other woman in knowing she was going to die. And then to which Margo leapt over the table, tried to get her hands on him.
Oh, she beat the shit out of
him. She tried to jump him. She got pulled off by one of the servers, I think.
Yeah.
But it was at that point. And this is the part that I really appreciated because Tyler was just such an insufferable little prick. Slowik pulled Tyler into the kitchen, and he's like, okay, Mr. Know-It-All, you want to be chef? You want to be a chef? He puts a chef jacket on him. He writes his name in Sharpie over on one breast, and then he goes, all right, what do you want to make? And, of course, Tyler's shaking like a leaf. Like, he's not at all prepared for this, being put on the spot, whatever. So he asks for leeks and shallots and butter, and he's like, ooh, and Slowik's all, ooh, how inspired, and then lamb. And so that was what that particular course was. And
it was done so poorly.
Like, it was awful. Just... It was raw, basically raw lamb, half-cooked leeks. Like, in the right hands, I'm sure it would have been tasty. But he fucked it up, and then Slowik rips the chef jacket off of Tyler, leans in and whispers in Tyler's ear. And we're not privy to that. You just see Tyler start to shake, and he's crying, and he takes off his necktie, and you see him walk to the back of the kitchen and out of frame. And we don't know. You can wager a guess as to where that was going, but Tyler's grievance was being a fucking know-it-all. And
yeah, there was a lot of bringing up the how like one-dimensional these characters were, mm-hmm. but making it work. And that was something that I could actually appreciate, because as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, there's a lot. I was like, it's very, very typical, or very kind of like, okay, that, like, for instance, the food critic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The food critic and her editor during the film, I was like, okay, they are like the standard. That, like, that's just,
oh yeah, you know what you're,
that's exactly
at.
What they're doing. Like, they're the pretentious, like, the food critic that's just gonna down, like, she downed everything that was thrown in their face.
I loved his reasoning, because it was such a fighting for the underdog thing that he did with her, where there was the one scene with the tacos, and he was given the story, it's about memories, and he was talking about the story about his dad being a drunk, stabbing him in the thigh, the whole bit. But on each tortilla was laser printed, they like laser burned pictures on all of them. And hers were pictures of a bunch of restaurants that she had reviewed. And but because she was such a high profile food critic, those were all restaurants that she reviewed that had closed,
yeah.
Because of her review. And Slowick decided that because she was just such a pretentious bitch, she ruined the lives of every single one of those business owners who was doing their damnedest to stay alive. And
there's also an article in his office from her,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a review of his and
praising him. And she takes credit for, quote-unquote, making him.
Making him, yeah.
Which he does not appreciate. And so he was getting back at her, because she was specifically invited to this thing.
Yeah.
I think Tyler is the only one that wasn't specifically invited.
Tyler bought into it, but it was also a thing of Slowick telling him the master plan. So it's kind of like, oh, nope, you're good to go.
Right.
And then, so the food critic's yes man, the editor, he was also...
Oh, he was pretty awesome.
Yeah, he was also really funny, because he just fed into whatever she said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's an absolute sycophant. It was awful.
Yeah. The other guys, the Wall Street guys, they were probably my least favorite, just because... they were those douchey guys. They were the do you know who we are kind of guys.
Yeah, I love that they're like, well, we didn't want to have to play this hand, but
yeah.
I'm like, I bet you didn't.
And I loved Elsa with those guys, because she was like, I don't give a shit who you are.
except they worked under the guy who owned Hawthorne.
Yeah.
The restaurant that they were, the island. He owned the island.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to try to play big man with it. And, I mean, Elsa, to her credit, she shut it right down. But they were there because they were embezzling money.
Yeah.
And they worked for the guy who thought that he had Slowick under his thumb.
Yeah, they were embezzling from him. And it was funny, the scene that... They played the whole "Do you know who we are?" card. It was during the bread scene,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, "You know what? Can we just get some bread? Like, you know,
we
paid for it. It's like, can we get some bread?" And she goes, "No."
To be fair, though, I would be asking for some fucking bread. Too.
I probably would be too. Like, it was.
To
but again, that's
be
just,
fair,
I mean, because that bread looked really tasty, but and it's like,
oh,
especially
sure,
with those oils, it's like.
But they just got a picture of it. They didn't actually get it. Well.
Yeah, I mean, you toast it up a little bit of butter, and yep. But that was the thing. Was like, so that scene was really funny, and then come the tortilla time. So every like on the memories of these tortillas, seeing how they have, it's like the tax returns. It's like, it showed the bank statements. Yep. So I was like, how does he have this information? It's like, they're like, are we going to be okay? Like, this is, you could just see them starting to worry.
They were sweating hard because that shit would have gotten them thrown into a federal prison. Like, yeah. What the fuck? I'd be a little upset about it, too. Or I'd at least be a little bit nervous. So, stupid boys.
Who, I think the actor. Let's talk about the actor next.
John Leguizamo, you mean?
Oh, yes.
You mean that guy?
I think so.
The washed up wannabe actor who got off because he made a bad movie?
Yep.
He was chosen. Him and his... He was there with his assistant. Was it assistant or his agent?
Both.
Okay. So, but he was there with his employee. Yeah. And he had been invited because Slowick, on his one day off in like 3 weeks, decided he wanted to go see this movie. It's John Leguizamo's character.
He was going to have a perfect Sunday. It was going to be relaxing. And there was one movie that was playing. He decided to go. And he fucking hated it.
Yeah, and it ruined his one day off in weeks, and that is what marked him to die. And that, which I thought was actually pretty funny. I was like, okay.
That was really good. And what was also really funny was I saw like a little interview with John Leguizamo about this character, and it turned out that he based it off of Steven Seagal. I was like, that's fucking dope.
Because he was being a tryhard.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, and I guess, like, John and Steven, like, have a pretty rocky little relationship. And I mean, it's not very surprising, but...
I mean, nobody has a good relationship with Steven Seagal.
Exactly. So that's why I was like, but it's just funny that he kind of based it around Steven. But what was really funny was... what's the actor's name? I forget his name. It was
Cortez.
Cortez. So Cortez and his assistant were sitting down at dinner, and they were talking about what the future is going to end up being. And they're trying to actually revive his career because his movies aren't really doing so hot, and he's just kind of like falling out of, yeah, he's falling out of the limelight, and they're like, they don't know how he's going to keep it up. And then he's pitching to her a really terrible food show.
Oh my God, yeah.
And it's just like, I kind of think back to a lot of like the, you know, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and, you know, Goody. Like, those are my favorites to watch because it's like, they are just so energetic, and they can actually talk about the food. They know what the fuck they're talking about. Yeah. Like, you know, more or less to a degree type of thing.
Well, no, they're all chefs. So, yes, they know exactly what they're talking about.
I'm talking like for some of those, I gave a couple of those examples, but some of those food channels, they just kind of just go on like they touch on the basis. This guy was just like, yeah, I walk in, you know, I have a baked potato, and I just kind of, I go, yum, it's so good. And then you know, we talk about, you know, saving kids in Africa or something like that for the next half hour. You're like, it was like, wow, like that's your pitch. Like,
low energy.
Yeah.
And the whole time his assistant was trying to quit.
Yeah, the whole
time. She's like, here's the keys to all of your apartments. Here's my company credit card. And he's like stonewalling her. And she's like, I really just want to fucking quit.
Yeah.
And
what a hell of a time to quit. Like,
she was trying.
You can't get off. You're just sitting there.
But what I thought was really funny was when, towards in the third act, when we get the big reveal as to what's actually going on, and Slowick is going around the room, and she's like, well, why am I picked off? And he goes, where'd you go to college? She goes, Brown. He's like, he's like, student loans? She goes, no. He's like, that's why you're going to die. Because she was privileged.
Yeah.
And that pissed him off for some reason.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So she didn't have to take student loans to go to college.
And you can just see it on her face. She's like,
the fuck, man?
Like, what the hell? But yeah, and then, I'd almost say, I think one of the sadder little, part of the group is the rich couple.
The Howells. No, they weren't the Howells. They reminded me of the Howells from Gilligan's Island.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I thought of that too.
I don't remember, I forget what their character names were. I don't think they were ever actually mentioned.
I just call them Nergies.
But their sentence was because they had been to his restaurant. They were paying out the nose. They'd been to his restaurant like 11 different times over the course of two years. And Slowick looks him dead in the face. Because they're like, we were good customers to you. What are you doing? And he looks dead in the face. He's like, name one dish you've eaten in the last 11 times you've been here. And they just looked at him. And they couldn't think of a one. And Judith Light's character is like, cod, we hit the cod.
Oh, yeah. Like, so they're sitting there. And he walks, like, he does that thing where he walks up to him and he's like, you know, how many times have you been here? And they go, six times. And, like, and you could just see just that crushing, like, Slowick was hurt. Because he's like,
Ralph Fiennes did so much acting with his face. I was
so, God, he's so fucking good.
I love him.
God, he's so good. But that was the thing was like, it's when he's like, oh, it's, you've been here 11 times. And then when he's asking the husband, what was a dish? And the husband's just face is just blank. Like, it's just, there's just nothing behind it. Like, he could have literally said corn on the cob or something, and he could not say anything. And his wife said, it's the cod.
Say the cod, yeah.
And he's like, it wasn't cod. It was a, like a spotted halibut.
It was a rare spotted halibut.
Yeah, and he was so just like, you motherfuckers.
It's because he was slow. It got mad because it just became a place for them to go. It wasn't special anymore.
It was their Chili's,
pretty much. And he's like, people.
Actually, Chili's wouldn't be too bad right now. Anyways,
and he had said, he's like, people spend an arm and a leg to come here. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity for most people to come here. You've been here 11 times in the last 2 years. You can't name one dish you've had in the last 11 visits. Like, this is nothing for you.
And on top of that, it's wasting his art. Like,
for him, yeah, that was the real slap in the face. It's like, he's like, I put so much energy and effort and what he thinks is love into it. It's not love, but he's put so much effort into it. And his ego is so inflated by this, just to have people, it's like another place for them to go. It's not special anymore. Hurt him.
Yeah.
Which,
and he even says too, it's that I put so much work into the things that you guys put into your body to just
shit it out later.
Yeah. It's just like, and I was like, that's such a, like, I got to thinking, it's like, with all of the art, I mean, I do my own little bits of art, and I know you've got your own way of creating, and I mean, you're a hairstylist, so it's like, you know, like, what that is, like, to actually create something for somebody, and I know with, like, the hair and stuff like that, because hair grows, it's like, you have to constantly,
you know, but my favorite is, it'll do.
Exactly. It's like, you have no idea, it's like, that's not,
it'll, like, do? Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been with you for many, many years, and I've been through so many hair salons with you where you have sat there and gone, I am so goddamn tired of just doing a mullet. It's like, I don't want to do redneck hair, you know, anymore. It's like, I want to do some higher end, you know, type stuff. It's like, you wanted that, like, higher quality, but you also wanted those people that are actually going to appreciate it.
Yeah, I and that's why I'm in a barbershop now, because I just don't care anymore.
But that's where it's like, but with Slowick, it's these people, it's like, yeah, you're wasting your money because you don't want the experience. You're just to burn money.
It's another Friday night for you.
Yeah. That's fine. But the thing that killed me was the wife. She was the one, like, she, from the moment you saw her, she was just constantly drinking.
And she just wasn't engaged.
Yeah.
She just was not engaged in life at all.
And what was interesting about their situation was she kept mentioning, oh, like, I think there was a girl named, like, Crystal or something like that. It's like, oh. And then she turns to Morgan.
Margo.
Why do you keep saying Morgan?
I don't know.
God, I don't know what the hell.
You're bad with names, mostly.
I'm also coming off of being sick, too, so it's, I did not sleep. Sure. Anyways, but Margot.
Samsonite.
Now all I can think about is Christmas Vacation. I don't know Margot. But that was the thing, is like, Margot kept looking over at the couple. And the wife noticed it. And she's like, well, why does that girl keep staring at us? And she looks very familiar.
Yep.
And it just kind of slowly builds from there. And they do a beautiful job where they set that up, and then they redirect you to a whole completely different situation that you get focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Until the moment of the taco night and the tortillas, the memory tortillas. And the wife is looking through all these different tortillas, and she comes across one where it looks like her husband...
with some woman.
And he's like, who is this? And the husband's like, I don't know what that is. Is she shining my shoe? Like, I don't know what the... Like, he's trying to make up every excuse, and it's just not working.
So. Ultimately, though, that detail ended up being kind of inconsequential. It really didn't matter quite that much, as much as they let it on. I think that was one thing, they could have just dropped that angle and it would have been better off for it.
I didn't like the angle.
Yeah.
I felt like that was way too easy.
It was a road to nowhere.
Yeah. But it was one of those, like, it's just when you get to those storylines where I'm like, wow, that played out perfectly for you guys. It's like she could have been an escort. And then he tried to hit on her, like, in the bathroom or something like that.
Sure.
And then,
like, you know, there's other ways to go about doing this.
Yeah, but it's, like, the fact that she already knew him, and then he Tyler hired her, like, Slowik would have been like, okay, yeah, because there's a tie-in with this family.
Yeah, Slowik had no clue how she tied into, like, any of it, so... Again, that was one of those where I was like, I think they're trying to do something here, but it didn't quite land.
Yeah, it was a little too much.
It was just how do you tie her in with everybody else?
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, they gave it the old college try, but ultimately I'm like, it was an inconsequential detail.
The one thing, though, that I did like that was a nice little touch was... So right after the mess, which we'll talk about, everyone's freaking out and they're wanting to leave. So the couple are trying to leave the island, and they're being stopped by the bodyguards and Elsa. And
Elsa really was the scariest thing about this movie.
Yeah.
She was fucking terrified.
She's like, okay, well, you can go ahead and turn around. Like, you need to go sit back down and relax. This is part of the show and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, and they wouldn't listen. So finally, like, they're like, okay, cool. And then they grab the man's hand and they cut off his ring finger.
Mm-hmm.
They just took the sharpest knife and slink, and then... And then you could see, like, the wedding ring fall to the floor. And I was just like, I like that little,
that's some symbolism
there.
Yeah,
I like that. So it was his punishment for not listening, which also set up for the rest of the group to kind of feel like, okay, now, like, we're not safe. Like, nope. There was this whole level of, oh no, like this is all wrong, and then it just escalates from that.
Because that was that the form. First moment in the film where it was turned on the guests.
Yes.
Was that.
And Slowik didn't care. Like, he was like, I'm not hiding this from you. I'm not being like some James Bond villain. It's just like, no, this is what's happening.
Yeah, like, no, we're all going to die tonight.
Yeah, this is my plan.
You're coming too.
One of my other favorite little bits, too, was... So, Slowik is kind of telling everybody that they're all going to die later that night. And they're a part of the menu and everything else. And the stock boys, they turn around and they went from, do you know who we are, to, we'll give you whatever money, just...
Oh, yeah.
So they get to that level, right? And Slowik says, I don't care about money. And they're like, well, you know who we work for. It's like, we work for...
Again, zero care factor.
Yeah, it was like, we work for the guy that owns you. And so he's like, oh, yeah, by the way. And so he starts to talk about the boss or the guy that owns the island, and he turns around and out in the around the ocean, like, there's this like crane that's got him, like, it's got the owner tied up with angel wings on, and then they just slowly just drop him down.
It was
down.
A nice touch because he was an angel investor.
Yeah.
So I kind of appreciated the little turn of phrase there they put on that. But then, yeah, he got lowered down into the ocean and drowned. But also was kind of funny was he ended up being cut up and put in the gift bag at the end of the movie. Everyone got a gift bag.
He did get cut up, right?
Yeah, at the end of the movie, everyone gets a gift bag before they die. And Slowik mentioned that there's a piece of Dale. The owner's name was Dale in each bag. And I was like, wow, that is so fucked up.
Good. Yeah. Oh, and then like during that, the dip... The angel dip.
Mm-hmm.
I love that everyone's like freaking out, and then like Slowik's like, no, listen, just close your eyes and just listen. He's listening for the girl to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler, the prick he is, closes his eyes too, and he's just like,
oh god,
taking in the experience of what the chef says.
Yeah. And oh god,
watching him like I'm just listening. And on top of that, Tyler also, like as the movie's going on. It was very weird, just his demeanor compared to everybody else in like that's around him, because everyone else like
he was really into it.
All the crazy shit's happening. Like so, when the husband gets his finger sliced off, and everyone's freaking out, and they finally get everyone to sit down. Tyler's just sitting there, just eating. He's like, "This, I don't give a shit. Like, what's happening?" He's like, "It's because he knows what the end game is." And he's like, "Well, that's."
And the thing is we didn't know that he knew at that point in time, so it just felt like he was dissociating somehow and not connecting with anybody, and like he's just so deep in his fanboyism, whatever you want to call it, like that he's literally just like, "Yeah, it's all part of the show."
Or what was so when Margot comes back from the kitchen after Slowik tells her like, "Oh no, everyone like you have a choice of dying with us or dying with them,"
mm-hmm.
and she comes back and she walks right back up to Tyler and he asks her veggie or protein for the next course. She smacks the shit out of him, and he just kind of looks up at her, and he's like, "Veggie or protein?" Like, he's like, he did not care at all what, like,
he
what
wanted it was. To be he a part wanted, of this so fucking bad.
He wanted to see what was in that kitchen, but it was just the, like, I don't know if at that time, if she, or no, at that time, she had no clue that he knew.
Right.
And so now she's almost living with this knowledge that.
Because that's what she found out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, that was a nice little tie-in. For going back to the tortillas with the memories,
mm-hmm.
I love that they also did the whole thing of Tyler taking photos of the food.
Which they were not supposed to
Yeah, they were told not to take photos, and Tyler still did because he just...
He couldn't help himself. Had to do,
but I love that they did the laser tortilla of him taking the pictures of the photos. And I'm like, oh my god, like that's just... I was like, is that really all he did? That was so... Oh, so bad. And it's just... But it did make sense once it got to the...
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just the Uber Instagram foodie. Now...
The try hard.
Yeah, so... With all the players, so with the actor, the stock people, the food critic, the married couple, you know, Tyler and Margot, like, all of them, it was weird that they, like I said, they were all very one-dimensional, but they worked, and they meshed well.
They were the best versions of that, I think. I think what they did is they kept the characters very simple because of the roles they were serving. In the film.
Yeah.
They kept them very simple. They weren't supposed to be terrible. A lot of them weren't supposed to be terribly likable because you have to kind of... The tricksy part of this is the filmmakers almost wanted you to feel sympathy for Slowik because all of these people had sucked the pride and the ambition and the joy out of his life and out of his profession that he once upon a time held very dear. Like this was who he was. This is his identity. And they sucked the soul completely out of him.
Yeah. So the group, the dining group, like I said, they meshed well because of all the little tidbits that they played into it. The mm-hmm. one other thing that I loved is the opposite side of the dining party.
The crew?
The crew. All of his little minions and his, all of his little workers.
Yes,
and yeah. It's that level of just efficiency. And it's like everyone had like this like high skill level. And they were just trained perfectly. And they just followed everything Chef said to this cult-like...
To these cultish yeah. levels, yeah.
And I mean, I've seen like those high end restaurants. I also watch a lot of YouTube stuff, and I've seen that where it's just like you got if you're running a kitchen, you run it as efficiently as possible.
You have to.
Oh God, yeah.
I've worked in the restaurant industry. You have to, or the entire thing falls apart.
Oh my God, yeah.
It begins and like the entire restaurant flow begins and ends in that fucking kitchen.
I've seen an episode of Bar Rescue, so I know.
I've been in it.
I know. That's why it's like. So I appreciate the way just that high level, especially for a high dining. Level that they were offering, it's like you want them to have that. And on top of that, for every meal that they actually made for the menu was created by a 3-star Michelin chef. Like mm-hmm. she's I've seen some of her stuff. Like she's been on the Chef's Table and stuff like that. And she's like, she's crazy, crazy good. So, I mean, I did not. Like, once I found out that it was, I forget her name, I think it's Diane, but...
I have not looked into it.
I forget. Again, I'm not winning on names, so don't... It was Cheryl. But
sure, we'll go with so, Cheryl.
But yeah, no, but like, I know she was a 3-star Michelin chef, and I kind of feel bad that I don't remember her name. But,
You should.
Yeah. But they really utilized how... They trained the actors for the movie and just how they, just to make it feel real. But, and that's why I kind of say that it gave me that Midsommar kind of vibe because these, his workers were so, I mean, anytime like he said something,
they
yes,
were,
chef.
They were unison. Loyal, like, yeah.
And that was something where it's, on that other side of the card where it's like people are coming in and paying this high dollar amount just for his food mm-hmm. and not even enjoying the experience or not totally investing in his art form that he's putting out.
The way that he thought that they should.
Exactly. Now, on the opposite side of that coin with his workers... Just it's that cold. They just don't like they're so in like obsessed with being a part of him.
That level of when you get to that level in the culinary arts, you have to be obsessive.
Yeah.
You have to be focused to the point of obsession in order to get there because that's where you're working on. Some real innovative shit. And you have to almost be a bit Rain Man-y about what you do. It's just, it's, I give those people, and there's very few of them on this planet that are willing to go within sniffing distance of that level in the culinary arts. Like, it's incredible what they do. But their goal is creativity, innovation. That is their be-all, end-all. They want to make a name for themselves because they've done something so bonkers, batshit off the wall. That's their claim to fame.
Yeah.
And that's why it's the chefs, the minions in the kitchen are basically soldiers. They're Slowik soldiers, basically. That's their job. And every single one of them wanted to be in that kitchen with him.
And I almost feel like that could have been another little tie-in for Slowik, just wanting to end it all because he's like, it's gotten to him because of those people that are just obsessing over him, wanting to work for him and to prove themselves. It's like, that's got to be just draining on its own, mm-hmm. because you are the big boss, and to have,
you have to be in control.
Yeah.
You have to have your hand on every moving part of that kitchen. Everything begins and ends in the kitchen. Everything begins and ends with the executive chef of that kitchen. All of the menu ideas come from that person. They have to be in control of that. They have to delegate all of the duties. And then on top of it, just like in any other management role, you have to make sure all of those duties are being executed the way that they're meant to. Otherwise, again, that cog falls out of it. You played hockey. You had a coach explain it to you the exact same way. One cog breaks, the whole thing goes down.
We had our, that was our part of our team logo was we were the team Raiders, and we had gear cogs around all, like on all of our jerseys. And that was the whole thing is, yeah, if one of the cogs breaks, the whole thing falls the fuck apart. So mm-hmm. that was, I totally get that.
And that's the kitchen life is you have to maintain all that. So the pressure, and this is where Slowick, again, it's, his purpose was taken from him by all of the people in that room, but, and minus Cortez, because he just made a bad film, but like his purpose was taken from him. But also the amount of pressure that ended up being put on him ultimately, which drove him to the height, Slowick to the heights that he had accomplished. I think that's why we saw him, because this is a movie about a man who's completely cracked.
Yeah, he's done.
And he is taking anyone down with him that he thinks got him to that point. Anybody who might even be mildly guilty of getting him to that point, he brought them into that dining room.
You know what's really funny, though, is so Slowick had this, this whole master plan for the menu, mm-hmm. right? But what was hilarious is that, so there was a scene where it was the outside, I think it was...
Oh, that chase?
It was meal four or five. And
there was two meals. Yeah.
Yeah. They went outside for drinks and, you know, to kind of get some of the night air. And then it turned around where it's like, nope, he tells a story about it's the male, the male mishap or something. It was like,
it was the sous chef Catherine was talking about how he was hitting on her. And then when she didn't return his advances, he basically, like, iced her out for 8 months. And this was because certain members of the kitchen team were able to plan these parts of the menu. He allowed them to do that because everybody's going to die. So go ahead and air your grievances out now. Hers was getting back at Slowick for being a pig, basically. Yeah. And then it turned into...
He was trying to have sex with her.
And she said no.
Yeah.
And he kept trying, She kept shutting him down. So it ended up turning into a literal manhunt. Every single male in that group was sent out onto the island, and they had to run away. And if the kitchen staff caught them,
we never found
out what the punishment was going to be.
Well, that was the funny thing. It was like, so while his chef was telling the story, he turned around to her, and he's like, "I'm sorry." And she grabbed the pair of scissors and stabbed him in the dick,
in
the thigh area. But like, what was also really great, and I love, again, me being continuity guy, Ralph Fiennes walked with a limp the entire night,
mm-hmm.
which was fucking great. Didn't break, which is awesome. But so they get into this thing where after they stab the chef and she rubs the blood on his chest, that's when they tell all the men, like, okay, like,
run.
You guys, it's like, you run, and it's like, and then, you know, try not to get caught, I guess. Like, and so what was hilarious is that one of the stock guys, he's like, in the middle of
the explanation,
he's like, yeah!
Well, because we get to the part where it's like, well, if one of my guys, one of my security guys catches you, and then he runs, the other,
he just bolts, and there's like, okay,
And I just like the Slowick was like, well, never mind then.
Yeah.
And so everybody was off, and the guy, it was a manhunt, but again, a little bit of the comedy sneaks in because it turns into the guy who got found last got a dessert.
Yeah. And then what's great is like, so, and they're making it like this, like, really epic, just horror movie chase scene through this really dark woods. And Adam, like, so everyone starts getting caught and they're all freaking out and they're, you know, getting, they're all like scraped up and dirty and sweaty. And then all of a sudden, like, the last guy is the editor for the food critic. He's in the chicken coop, like, in this little, like, corner, and then all of a sudden, through the slit, this arm comes in with this, like, really fancy dessert, and is like, a dessert for the last, for the person the last found last. Found,
yeah.
And the guy's just like, oh, shit. And then, like, he just kind of, like, takes the plate, and it's just like, all right.
Gee, thanks.
But that's all it was. Like, that's all it was. It was like, okay, you just run, and it's like, we'll catch you, and it's like, yeah, because we got to bring you back. Obviously, now at the end, it's like, well, they have to bring everybody back to, you know, because for the final menu thing, but it's just like, it's just very, this movie really sets you up for not knowing what that in, what they're
you
playing
You never
on.
Really know
I
what
like that.
The, yeah, what the end game is. The only thing that I was 100% sure of was who the final girl was. Anya Taylor-Joy's Margot was our final girl. It was very clear from the beginning that this was going to be, just the way she was framed right at the very beginning, this was going to be our final girl.
Yeah.
That was it. There was that was the one thing where they didn't pull the rug out from under you with it. It's like, clearly she's going to go all the way to the end. But I thought her method of survival was very clever. So when we go to its traditional horror movie or slasher film, there's a lot of, like, running, crying, fighting, very physical.
Oh my god, that scene where when Chef tries to, he brings her back in and says, okay, in 10 minutes, like, you have to decide if the other on what side. When he's like, okay, she finally says, yeah, I don't belong here, and he's like, all right, cool, go get a barrel from the back room.
Thanks for losing the train of thought for me.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, back to where my original point was, and I'll address that in a second.
Okay.
She, in most traditional movies, there's a very physical part to what the final girl has to go through. There was none of that here. She didn't have to do that. She had to, she used her brains the whole time. She used her problem-solving skills. She used some powers of deduction. The one time she did have to get physical was when she had to kill Elsa, because Elsa suddenly felt threatened. Yeah. Like, her position was threatened.
And that's what I meant with the barrel. So yeah. when he says, go get the barrel, and you can join us and actually become a worker, basically. And then Elsa's like, oh, maybe I should get it.
Hell you will.
Yeah. And you could definitely see where Elsa was,
she,
like,
was threatened.
No, I'm his right-hand man. That's my job.
Yeah, she did not like that one bit.
And then when Margot ends up finding the back room, and she ends up going into the chef's house, Elsa has followed her the whole way and ends up this massive fight scene, which is, oh my god, it's so fucking...
It ended up with
anxiety.
Elsa getting stabbed in the throat.
Yeah.
And, for sticking her nose where it didn't fucking belong. And, but she felt threatened, so naturally, she's gonna try to do something about it, right?
I want to know what the barrel was for.
The barrel had all the s'mores stuff in it.
It did have the s'mores stuff in it. Okay, okay.
That's what that was for, gotcha. Was all the s'mores stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
That was also, I guess we'll just get it into the end of this thing, because it goes on the same path with the our final girl here. I got a real kick out of the finale, because Margot was the one who figured out how to kind of get Slowik's goat, because she was his unknown throughout the entire movie, so that's why he kept coming back to her.
I call her the speed bump.
Yeah,
for Slowik,
because he was such a perfectionist, and having her just kind of show up out of the blue, he's like, what the fuck, what do I do with this? So, because again, being a chef, especially an executive chef, when you get to that level, you have to be very methodical, and everything has to be planned out to the very last detail in order for anything to run smoothly at all. So she, her being the speed bump, as you put it, really fucked things up for him. And it got into his head and it kind of screwed him a little bit. But her finding out the things that she did and seeing the photos that she did in his room and went through and actually brought the barrel back with all the s'more shit in it. And at the end of the movie, in order for one last-ditch effort to try and save her own ass, just herself, even if she can get no one else out of there, she was going to save her own ass, she said, hey, I don't like this. Take it back. I want to send it back to the kitchen. Whatever that last dish was before dessert. And Slowik just stood there, and he's like, you could see Ralph Fiennes, again, acting with his face. It goes completely blank. Like, what the fuck do I do? What do I do? I've never had food sent back before. What do I do? And she uses the photos against him where she looks at him and says, and he's like, well, what do you want? I can make you whatever you want. And she goes, I want a cheeseburger. And he's like, okay. And she goes, no. Not with some stupid, deconstructed, artistic nightmare. I want a cheeseburger on a bun. And she is trying to think of the most rudimentary, again, because what his happiest was working at a burger joint. Uses the most rudimentary thing. And he goes, like, okay, how do you want it cooked? Medium. What kind of cheese? American. And he even agreed with me. He's like, American is the best cheese for that because it doesn't separate when it melts. And I'm like, it's about the only good thing American cheese is good for because it's gross. And he asked, do you want fries? And she's like, in crinkle cut or straight cut? Or julienne?
The julienne.
Do you want crinkle cut or julienne? And she's yeah. So, again, it's the most rudimentary, just diner food is what she asked of. But where she got him was this was her basically asking for her out. Because she's like, I gave you what you wanted. Yeah. You wanted pushback.
She gave him the just a complete mind fuck.
But ultimately, it's what he wanted and what he needed. He wanted somebody. Slowik wanted somebody to push back. He wanted somebody to make him fucking feel something again. He didn't feel anything anymore.
Yeah.
And that was kind of her gift to him because she saw how fucked up and tortured he was by all of this. But I loved her clever way of saying, are you going to let me leave? Was, hey, my eyes are bigger than my stomach. She ate one bite of this burger.
One small bite.
But she looked at him and was like, my eyes are bigger than my stomach. Can I get it to go?
Yeah. She treated it as like she was just at just a regular restaurant. Mm-hmm. And same thing. It was like because of the dynamic of what you would do in that situation with a waiter. And it's like because she kind of was sending him back to his basics, he just kind of just treated it that same way.
But he hadn't been challenged. No. Slowik hadn't been challenged and pushed on in so long that to have this girl come in who didn't give a fuck and was like, I don't want any of your super fancy, pretentious, stupid food. Like, just fucking feed me. Your job is to feed me. You're a chef. And her pushing back and saying, you failed at the one thing you were supposed to be good at, and that was making me full.
Yeah.
Your job was to feed me, and you sucked at it. Now feed me.
And that was the best thing, too, is after... So as she told him that she wanted the burger, he just kind of was like... You could see at first he was insulted. Mm-hmm. He's like, a burger? Really? Like, that's what you're wanting? And then he's like, fine, I'll make it for you. But then as he started to make it, you could see that face of just comfort and just...
And he was smiling.
Yeah, and he was just happy. And it was just like, it was the last meal besides the s'mores that he was going to make. And it was like a perfect send-off.
He made her the perfect cheeseburger. She gave him the perfect ending. It was a nice... little bow on what had been going on.
Now, I'm going to ask you this. Was your mouth watering as much as mine was?
Oh my god, I wanted a cheeseburger so bad.
I went out and got burgers after that. Like, I'm not even joking you. Like, I sat down watching. I'm like, oh, what am I going to have for dinner? And I'm like, I want a fucking burger. That burger looks so good. Now, One thing that I was like, ooh, that's interesting. I'm going to try that next time I make the burgers. Onions? The onions!
Yeah.
I was like, you grill the onions and then they like kind of cook in the juice? I was like, that's
genius. He had the sliced onions. He threw them on the flat top. And they were cooking down, caramelizing on the flat top. Then he put the patty on top of the onions. And then he put the cheese on top of the patty. So that way when he layered everything together, there was this layer of caramelized onions between the two patties. And I'm sitting there and watching this whole thing.
Just talk dirty to me.
Oh, I know. I know. So, and I sat there and I was watching this yesterday afternoon. And I looked over at Curtis because he was reading a book. He was doing something else entirely. And I looked over at him and was like, I want a cheeseburger so bad right now. I can hardly stand it. I am a burger whore. Like, I am a cheeseburger whore. Me too. Yep. And I'm not even going to talk about what I would do for a really good cheeseburger. But, like, just seeing that, I was like, holy fuck, that was perfect. I wouldn't use American cheese because I personally don't like it. But I'm, like, looking at watching that whole thing, I'm like, God damn. Like, oh, it was like porn.
About to bust.
It was ridiculous. But yeah. He made her the perfect burger, and she was happy with it, and he was happy with it, and he let her go.
And one other thing that I love about that interaction was, like, even though she ordered the burger, he kind of felt euphoric about making the burger. Mm. And then we took her, he delivered the plate, right? He delivered it, put it down, she took the bite, and then she's like, oh, my eyes are bigger than my stomach, can I get a dog bag? And then he gives her the bill. He's like, oh, it'll be $9.50.
It was $9.95.
$9.95. Like, so she gives him a 10. I would have loved it if she gave him a tip. Like, just, here's your, I'll give you, here's 15. Like, right. Something small, but it's like, you know, but he charged her.
It was a no-tipping restaurant.
He charged her such a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
Not $1,250. Like, it was
a $10.
He got everything of what he used to do,
mm-hmm,
in his old diner days.
That made him happy.
I was like, that, just that little bit of amount where they, like, he, because he was like, oh, I'll just, you could just leave. But he's like, no, she paid him. She paid him, got everything. And it's like, that psychological.
The full restaurant experience. Yeah.
But it's like, it's given that, it's that weird tweak because it's like, she manipulated his mind to being like, to, because he could have just been like, no, sit at, like, I'm like, you're messing up my, like, but no, it's like she like screwed with him in a, to a degree where it's like, he just kind of fell back into this old way of living and
I think she manipulated him, but I think he was willing to let it happen.
Yeah.
Just again, cause it's like you could see, again, Ralph Fiennes in his fucking face.
God, he's so good.
But he, like, you could see that twinge.
Yeah.
And you could see something kind of starting to thaw when he's like, you want a fucking cheeseburger? I'll give you a fucking cheeseburger. Like, you could see
him. The Grinch's heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Pretty much. And, but you could see him start to thaw out. And the smile. Ralph Fiennes did not smile one time throughout this entire movie until the last 10 minutes of this fucking thing.
Yeah.
It was right at the end when he was making a $10 cheeseburger that he finally was smiling. And you saw an expression on his face other than boredom and just...
The one thing that I do have to critique, though, is I didn't see him toast the buns. Everybody listening right now,
always toast your buns.
Do not toast your buns, you're gonna have a bad time.
I would put money that those things hit the flat top.
They probably did.
I'm not... A chef like that's not going to let that fly under his nose.
I was like, no, but you butter the buns, toast them.
Yeah, no. Mm. Those suckers went down and probably toasted in the hamburger juice.
I'm making burgers this week. Jesus Christ.
Seriously. I'm having burgers for dinner tomorrow night. Yeah. Or actually, when this drops, we'll be having burgers that night.
I'm going to try that onion thing. Like, that was a really cool little... Like, because I do love me a grilled onion, but I never... It's like having to, like, I always do everything separate, but it's like actually having the meat cook on top of the grill, like, and then grilling it that way. I was like, that's fucking.
So they're embedded in the burger?
Yeah. It's like, that's really cool idea.
So can we talk about the dessert course?
Sure.
So the dessert course, the abomination that he that Slowik called it. It was s'mores, and I got a real. Because there's two things. I want to talk about the ending, but then there's one thing in particular that I think we've been putting off talking about.
Yeah.
Mostly for my sake.
Mm-hmm.
But the very end of this movie, it's a real cheeky way to go out. It's a very tongue-in-cheek way to go out. Where he's talking about it's s'mores and how they're an abomination. Like, it's just sticky and messy. It's
the shittiest dessert. Which, for my basic ass, it's like, this is fucking delicious.
Yeah, like, no, when he said when he was talking shit about it, I was like, hold up.
Whoa.
Who doesn't like a s'more?
Good
so,
night.
But you saw all of his kitchen staff was decorating the floors and the table, the dining tables, like a plate.
Yeah.
You would decorate a plate, and they were doing these real pretty designs with, like, melted marshmallow, and I think they did, because there's some s'mores you can fancy up with, like, cheese. Mm-hmm. It looked like they took, like, nacho cheese and put, like, smears of it all over the floor yeah. and stuff like that. And then they, in the center of it, they had huge marshmallows, and they laid a bunch of graham cracker crumbs around. So they had this real, when you got the aerial shot of it, it was really, really pretty. But the thing that got me, the fucking hilarity of it all, was because he was talking about what how awful s'mores were, which again was kind of he was pulling in a lot of the details that he did to set this whole menu up, and his final thing was these all of these awful people were in one room, but the one thing you do with a s'more is you gotta set it on fire, it's gotta get warmed up, so everybody is wearing these shawls of marshmallows that are strung together. And they're all, everyone's sitting there. They've accepted their fate, every single one of them. So they yeah. put on the marshmallow shawls, and then they put on these hollow chocolate fez type hats on everybody.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, okay, that's a look. And then he proceeds to light the entire room up after that. And you can see as, like, the fire is burning around, there's some really cool, like, the camera work was really well done in this scene. Where there are still shots of everybody and there's
a lot of
chocolates melting in their eyes. Oh my god, yeah.
Like the wife, it was really, that one was, that kind of hit a little bit hard just because it's like, after Margot is able to leave, she turns back around to the wife, and because like, earlier on in the movie, they've kind of come to terms like, oh, yeah, I was with your husband. We didn't really do anything, but like, yeah, like, you're...
Sure.
Yeah.
I am who you thought I am,
yeah. And so as Margot's leaving, she's trying to like, well, what do I do? And you can see on the wife's face, she's like...
Just go.
Just, it's fine. Like, it is what it is kind of thing. And then...
It's like, after, look, you were lucky enough to get out, go.
Yeah, then after the fire goes, and you could see it just, like, she just trying to take, like, everyone's quiet. No one's screaming, no one's, like, crying, like, they're
They've
just,
all accepted what's happening.
Yeah, they're just like, what the fuck are we gonna do? Like, I'm literally at chocolate melting on my head right now. Like, it's just...
And I think they've accepted that they're yeah. just shitty humans.
Yeah.
It... For what it's worth, except for that poor girl who went to Brown because she was able to, her parents were able to pay her way
so,
through.
So, as you said, the camera work was brilliant throughout this entire movie. But that final scene with the graham cracker, I love how they showed, like you said, showed the design.
Overhead, yeah.
But where they had the marshmallows in a circle and then...
Slowik in the middle.
Slowik was in the middle. And he lit himself on fire. He was the match. And that set up this entire
right.
s'mores debacle.
The symbolism throughout that last scene was... You could pick this thing apart for hours. Like, he was the catalyst for all of those people coming together. He was the reason why this menu was plotted out the way that it was. He allowed all of these things to happen, and then he let the wild card go. She wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So we're not going to have her be there.
Strangely enough, like it kind of worked out because it didn't ruin his menu.
No.
Like it, like I said, it was a speed bump in his menu, but he still finalized with what he needed to do. Like, he had enough people. Like, it was
he had to follow through with the perfect menu.
One thing that I loved too was his minions.
What? Oh, well, turning the gas on all the stoves.
Yeah, turn all the gas on. And then when before the flame shot out, they all turned and stared at the, like, because, like, there's, like, a big furnace in the center of the kitchen that would, just went exploded. But they all just stood there and they just looked at it. They didn't, it was such just that, yes, chef. Like, boom.
It was,
like,
so culty in that kitchen, though. It was some, like, Heaven's Gate shit.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
It was fucking, I think they were so devoted to their and fearless loyal leader.
And just, just that level. And that's where it's just, it is very culty. And, I mean, like, all of his minions, they lived on the island because they couldn't go anywhere else.
They slept 4 hours a day. They worked 19, 20 hours a day. Yeah. What the fuck? Where are you going?
Exactly. I know. But like that devotion to Slowik and just that level of, like, you're putting him on this pedestal that is just like,
that he didn't want to be on.
No.
He didn't want to be anywhere near that thing.
Yeah. He became a godlike figure to
against
to
his will.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do that. The problem is, He was so Slowik, and a lot of people in positions like his get that are like this, though. They're like, they're so desperate to be in control, and they control all of the minutiae of their lives to the point where they aren't in control of anything. And he had this rocket strapped to him that he was not ready for. I don't think he even wanted it. Again, looking at the pictures that Margot found in his room, you can kind of deduce that, like, this is not a ride I think he was prepared to go on, because his happiest picture was behind a griddle at a burger joint.
And what was also interesting, like, so we mentioned how he never smiled throughout this whole film. The one other time that I think he was actually pretty happy about it, and, like, you could kind of see the just that pressure kind of come off, is when he killed the owner of the island. Like, mm-hmm. when the drowning angel, it was just because he's like, after the guy drowns, he's like, oh, it's silent. Oh, it's nice. It's like, oh, so, I don't have to worry about this anymore. It's just like, this is my island now. Like,
yeah,
he didn't have to, he's like, I don't have this thing over my head.
And the happy birthday scene.
Yeah. That was
good. You told him it was in the trailer. Yeah. You told him it was my birthday. It seemed funnier at the time.
Yeah. So that, like, this whole thing just kind of really set you on edge as far as just with the tension with all of his minions and Elsa. And then it was just, it kind of continued on because you just didn't know what he was going to do next. And mm-hmm. it's like, was he just going to give you a piece of art, or was he going to, like...
And I think the best part about it is you think you've got it figured out. You don't. You really don't. This was very well written. So there is a scene that I've been putting off, talking about, for personal reasons, but, and for the sake of the movie, and because I think if you're listening to this, because you don't care about spoilers, but you still want to obviously go see it, if you are squeamish about suicide in any capacity, you're going to have a bad time. So the first act of the movie, traditional first act, we get a whole bunch of setup. You're getting to the back end of the first act, and you're kind of, like, watching this thing. You're like, where is this going? Like, where are we... Everybody's having these... You're kind of getting to know the diners. Everybody's having these individual conversations. You're getting the first couple of courses. And you're just kind of getting an idea of who everybody is and just what their personalities are like. And then you get to... I think it's the third course. And the kitchen staff are laying out a tarp, and they're laying down what looks like eucalyptus leaves. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what they were putting down, but they're these huge cut herbs. I don't know what they were. I couldn't tell exactly what
the
they were
way that
down.
they were laying everything out. Even the food critic was like, "Oh, they're doing some type of like Asian dish next," because it's like,
or it was, they were like, oh, and even she was like, oh, this is all part of the show, it's a theatrical thing.
Yeah, well, no, like, well, like, she was saying that it was an Asian dish because they were setting up a like a like some like it was a the sheet on the floor and like all the stuff. So they're going to have all the guests sitting on the floor, like, you know, and just kind of, you know, doing a traditional Asian thing. But not at all.
Not even close. But at this point, all the guests are getting into it because they're like, oh, this is a fun show. Ha ha ha. That they thought the bread course was hilarious because they're like, oh, the bread course, you funny guy, you. But the head sous chef, Slowick's right, like his right hand man, steps out onto the tarp. And I'm watching this thing. I'm like, is Slowick going to kill him? Because I saw the tarp go down. I'm like, well, someone's going to die now. Like, that's obvious. And they're having this conversation, and Slowick is telling the story about his sous chef and all of the things he accomplished and how badly he wanted to work for him on Hawthorne and all of these other things and how...
Just how devoted.
And... Yeah, but how he kept coming up short at every turn, coming up just short of perfection, and how this was eating him up inside, and the sous chef... swallows a bullet. He puts a gun in his mouth and blows his fucking brains out.
They call it the mess, is what the dish.
His dish was to commit suicide in front of the entire dining room. Yeah.
I'm gonna say this too. It's like we've had our situations with our family, and it's very, very hard. If you've ever felt the need, it's like, just fucking reach out to somebody. There's hotlines, there's all types of stuff. Don't do stupid shit. Like, don't do that. It's like, somebody out there loves you. Don't mess it up. It really sucks.
It is stupid, but this was a man in the character in the film. He had nothing. He devoted his entire life to... getting into that kitchen, to his ambition and his life's work was to get into that kitchen with Slowick.
What was also really interesting was that we got introduced to him early on too with Tyler, because Tyler rushes up and he's like, I want to see the kitchen, and he walks right up to that sous chef and he's like, oh, like, he's asking him questions about this,
his equipment and stuff. Yeah.
And the sous chef like turns around, he's like, oh, go ahead and sit down, dinner's about to be served, and that was it. But his demeanor, and he was just like happy and just like, but then all of a sudden when he gets onto that sheet, it's just like, you could just see just the, like, he, you could tell like he didn't want to do it, but he knew what he was meant to do, I guess.
Well, no, mess, he did want to do it, yeah, because that was his dish to plan. He had his two sous chefs plan two of the dishes on the menu.
And what was funny is for the male chase scene, right? So all the women got to go back to the table and have it was like tea or
drinks
and stuff like that. Yeah. So they all went back and sat down with the sous chef that she thought of that idea.
Yeah. Catherine.
Catherine. And so they were trying to like, oh, like, you're such a bright woman. They're trying to butter up the sous chef. And she turns around. She's like, no, it's totally my idea that, you know, that he's going to kill everybody. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, it's like, oh, there's no getting out of it.
But no, it was just like, they were, everybody was resolved in what was going to happen that night. And, no, I 100% believe that was Jeremy? I think his name is Jeremy.
Yeah.
That first sous chef, that was his plan. Like, he planned that dish, and he was resolved. That doesn't mean you're not going to feel something before you do it. But that was exactly what he wanted to do. But that was the moment where you kind of got an idea as to where this movie was going. Because up until that point, it was pretty light. Like, there was some yuck-yucks in there, and... you were like, well, that guy's kind of a douche, and what the fuck is going on over there? And you could tell that the older married couple was having some problems, and you got to know everybody. But that was literally the exact turning point where this movie got deadly serious.
I can't tell you how shocked I was when that moment happened.
Same, and you warned me.
Yeah. Well, and I told you, it's like, I told you about it because I wanted to make sure you were going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was just one of those things where it's like, in a weird way, it's so good because it shocks you. You're not ready for it. I thought Sloak was gonna...
I thought Sloak was gonna kill him.
I thought he was gonna kill him, too.
I thought he was gonna slaughter him like a pig right there.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then I was just like, oh, no, that's not even close to what we got.
So not only was that the moment when I realized this movie was becoming deadly serious, but that was also the moment I realized I'm not gonna be able to predict what happens.
No, and that was a beautiful thing.
Which is so refreshing, because I've seen a lot of movies. I'm also a writer. I've read a lot of books. I've been in stories. So what sucks is the fact that when you're well-read...
And you can foreshadow.
Or you're a cinephile, you can see almost everything coming at all times. Which really, like, if you think it's annoying being on the outside when someone says something, imagine being in the inside of our heads. Because the whole time we're like, well, that's going to happen. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. And then it does happen. And you're like, well, fuck, I ruined the movie for myself. Even if we don't tell anybody. It sucks. Because, like, and that's why I try so hard to shut my brain off when I'm watching some of these. But a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of writers and scriptwriters in Hollywood, especially, that just, they just are flinging cliche at you. Or they don't, even if you take a trope or a story idea that is well worn, if you do it well, it works. But this I don't know what the writers were doing with this, but in with the menu, like, it just, they just kept turning everything on its ear, and you thought for sure you were taking a right, but you ended up taking a left.
Yeah.
And it just got, by the time that movie was over, I sat there on the couch, I was watching the credits roll, and I'm like, this shit had nuts in it. This movie's fucking bonkers. What happened?
The one thing that I did love was for the ending, just how it just kind of stopped. Where it's like Margot gets on the boat and she goes off. Does her engines actually die, or does she
shut the boat off.
Okay.
She shut the
I thought off. Maybe she like ran out of gas or something like that.
No,
like
she
that
shut
was like a
off.
Safety thing for the people on the island. Since everyone was going to die. They just didn't want
to. Yeah, no. You could see she clearly did that because she wasn't freaking out when the boat shut off. Yeah. She went and made herself comfortable.
So there's this, I watched this YouTube clip, and I think you watched it too, but where they have this theory that Margot dies at the end still. And I would actually have to debunk them. So what they're saying is that, all right, in the beginning of the movie, when the group gets on the island, Elsa is giving them the grand tour. And she's basically saying that pretty much the actual island is everything that they eat. They harvest all their foods there. They get everything from the sea. Like, everything is, like,
literally
on that
from
day.
Scratch. Yeah.
Yeah. It is that day, used, super fresh, all that good stuff. And then they go to this barn, like, shack. And she tells them that they only used the finest, you know, beef, but it's dry aged to 152 days.
Specifically
152 days. And then they make the comment, and this is like, it stood out to me, where they said, oh, what happens if you go over 152 days? And she basically says that the person eating the meat would start to hallucinate, probably get, they would be poisoned, and then they would probably slip into a coma and die. So they're like, luckily we're professionals, and
that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, like, we don't have to worry about that. So they're like, oh, okay. And then they kind of drop the whole thing. So they were then saying that, what if that beef that they use for the burgers was 153 days old since it was dry aged.
Yeah.
So she took a bite of it, and then she ends up eating the burger at the end. So maybe it's like that sealing her fate. However, that whole 152 day thing stuck with me as I'm watching the movie. So I also, kind of like Tyler, I got into watching a lot of YouTube channels and food. Like, I watch a lot of Food Network type shit, right? Well, there's this one channel that I am really hooked on. It's called Guga Foods. And if anybody has watched Guga Foods, he is obsessed with dry aging, right? So I was like, okay, I wonder, like, I know he's done some really long dry age stuff, and I'm like, I wonder what the longest he's done. And he, like, one of his experiments that he did a 1 year dry age steak.
Ugh.
So 152 days is what, about
5 months.
About 5 months. So normally it's, you go about 45 days is your, like, kind of like your standard, like, dry age, right?
Yeah.
So
like that.
He went a whole year, and when he ate it, it's like he got the funk, but it just, it wasn't right. Like the smell and everything is just, it was just too bad.
It's rotting meat. No yeah. kidding.
So the thing with, like, how, but at the same time, he went 1 year, didn't die, didn't poison himself. He was fine because it was the way that it was cooked and all, like, all the precautions that they took, like, in order.
Right. Like 152 yeah. days is probably the timing they thought made the best, like, the most tender steak. I honestly find the idea of, I understand the science behind yeah. it, but I find the idea of dry aging meat repulsive.
I've had it before, and no. I don't like the funkiness, but I do enjoy the tenderness of a dry. I think I've only had it twice in my life, but I went down this rabbit hole trying to figure out, like, this dry age
thing.
When
are you going to die?
Yeah, I know. And but then I came across another channel where this guy goes into, like, a high-end steakhouse, and they do this whole, like, testing thing for him where they do – it's a 24-day, 48-day, 140-day, 240-day, and then a 480-day –
Jesus.
Steak. Like, so it was like they had all these steaks laid out that were dry aged for that amount of time.
That's a no for me, dog.
And what was weird was that this guy said that the 240-day steak was the best, but the 480 was just was a little too much. And I was just like, that's a little, I was like, I'm curious. But at the same time, the guy didn't die. Like, the guy was,
yeah, oh yeah,
you know,
it's kind of,
so that's why I was like, it was just funny that they stuck on that 150 day, but it never went anywhere else.
I think it's the idea of it being kind of like Chekhov's gunny, where you're like, everything has to have a purpose by the end. And I don't think it did. I think he genuinely just made her a cheeseburger, because one of the things I saw was the boat motors died, and they didn't die. She specifically
shut
it off.
Yeah. And then sat down with their meal.
Yeah, and then to watch the building burn.
Yeah.
So, no, I honestly, I think she made it out. I think it was fine. So, what do you think of this one?
For me, I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah?
Like I said, I got a lot of mid-somar kind of vibes from it. It's mm-hmm. very sophisticated, makes you think of, you know,
it's a grown up. It's a grown up movie,
very
sure.
much so. However, I was a little, I don't know if I ruined it for myself though.
Oh no, what'd you do?
It was the,
what did you do?
The way that I was going into the movie, I think I had an expectation of what I thought.
Oh,
would have happened,
yeah, you made
that
a mistake.
Never happened. So if I had to, I'm gonna get my my writing armchair here, you know, Mr. Put my producer hat on. So during this entire film, I thought it was gonna be about cannibalism.
Oh yeah, no, you totally did that to yourself.
Yep. So if it was me, the owner, that the drowning angel,
mm-hmm.
I actually had to pause it and replay it back, because I thought he was missing body parts.
He gave him fingers in all the gift bags.
No. I thought he was missing, like, limbs, like his arms.
Oh, okay.
So
no, I think
he was just tied up, and then they did the dip. So for me, I thought it would have been even crazier if he was feeding his guest.
Bits of the owner?
Bits of the owner. Huh. Like, I thought, like, it's like, well, I'm going to use the freshest meat to, you know, give. Because there was one meal that dealt with, like, it was, like, around, like, bone marrow and, like, all this, like, really fancy, like, steaks and stuff like that. And I was like, that would have been a perfect time to be like, you know what? I'm going to feed them this guy. And it's just, like,
I hear you on that, but I'm glad they didn't. Because that was obvious.
I'm also glad. But, it, like I said, it ruined it for me because I'm like, the whole time I'm going,
this is not what, like, I was expecting.
There's got to be something. There's, like, they keep saying, it's like, oh, like, we only use the freshest meat and everything else, but you never actually see any of the, like, you saw the meat hanging in the little cellar thing, but you never see any cows. It's like, if they are getting all their, if everything is, you know, fresh from the island, it's like, where is their little farm area? Where's maybe, all the, you know?
Maybe it's implied cannibalism.
I don't know. That's where I'm like, I thought that would have been a cool thing to, and also a crazier thing to sit there and have these guests digest, you know, something that they weren't, like, because they don't give a shit what they're eating. They're just gonna eat, like, they're just gonna eat the rich, like, so that's where I was like, oh, that would have been a cool little, like, tie-in thing. But yes, at the same time, it would have been like, ah, it's a little too, you know,
it's real obvious.
Yeah, a little, little too obvious. But, like, that's what I was expecting it to be.
Well, that's your fault.
Yes, but at the same time, I thought it was still a fantastic movie. I was just like, I didn't know which way it was going to turn, and I love just the, just how he was just like, no, everyone's dying. Like, I don't know what you guys are,
like, there's no, I don't know what, like, you're asking me, you're going to die.
Yeah, like, this is a part of the menu. Like, we're like,
this is my plan.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, this is part of the, it's not part of the show, like, this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. It's like, and then, like, when he goes through the explanation of, like, of what they're, you know, what their faults are and stuff like that, and what he, the tie-in with him, it was just like, God, like, Ralph Fiennes is a fucking gem. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Voldemort, so, himself.
Yeah, for me, I ended up giving this one just, it was a 3.4.
Yeah.
Like, so it was, there was a, like I said, there's a few things that I'm like, I kind of wish that they pushed a little bit more, but at the same time, I was,
that's your own fault.
I was very happy with what I got, and so I was not mad at it. And like I said, Ralph Fiennes is fucking awesome. Like, in anything that he's, I see him in, he's just dope. Fucking Lego Batman. Come on, he's awesome as Alfred. You kidding me?
Yeah, I kept thinking of Red Dragon though the whole time I was watching
it. I was thinking Red Dragon as well too. God, he's so good. But yeah, no, but yeah, so yeah, 3.4 out of me. I definitely recommend watching this movie at least once. Like, once, it's one of those movies though that it's like, once you see it, you kind of know.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Like, for me, this one, I thoroughly enjoyed this thing. On it kind of came out of nowhere. It definitely surprised me.
I'm glad that we chose it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you had the idea to do this. Yeah. This is a 4.5 for me.
Ooh.
Yeah, this one, I it was super engaging. Like, because I kept going, what the fuck are we doing? Where are we going with this?
Ooh,
and it
that's
was super, super engaging. Yeah, I haven't seen a movie that well thought out in a while.
Yeah.
Especially where a couple of places kind of surprised me a little bit. I was like, well, I did not see that turn coming. Yeah. Like, that's rare, and I really appreciate that. The thing that holds us back from being a 5-star or 5-skull film for me is the rewatchability factor. It's just not there.
And that's why my score was a little bit as low as it was, is as much as it kind of keeps holding you in. It's like, once you see, you know, the curtains pulled back, it's like, okay, well, I don't really need to see it again. It's
right.
Not a,
it's so good. Like, you have to see this movie. Like, if anybody asks, yeah, no, 100% watch this movie.
Yeah.
But what keeps it from being like a 5-skull is that. And there are worse movies that I have given 5 skulls to, but it's because there's endless rewatchability to them. There's something quotable about them. There's a fun factor.
Yeah.
The menu is well thought out, well paced. It's an incredibly well done movie, but there really isn't a fun factor to this.
And I keep associating it with Midsommar, but it was the same kind of thing with that.
But not necessarily. I'm going to disagree with you on Midsommar, because the thing that Midsommar had going for it is that has a rewatchability factor simply based on the fact that you can go back and every time you watch that movie,
you see something new.
This one, you're not going to... This one's a lot more on the surface. Yes. The menu is way... Like, Ari Aster, he layers so much shit. There's always... You can go back and rewatch his movies, and we'll get to Hereditary eventually. But, like, with Midsommar, you can go back and rewatch it and see something else. There was something going on in the background that you missed, or there was some subtle symbol of something over here, or you get to the scene in the tent, and you basically have the whole movie's painted on the wall.
Yeah.
Like, there's things... There's layers to peel back there. This is... Not that. The menu does not have that.
But it's with that, the enjoyability level that you were saying, it's like where it's just the rewatchability, and it's just, it gives you that same kind of feeling. It's like, but Midsommar gives you, like you said, that little bit extra.
There's a lot more going on there for sure. But definitely, highly recommend, check this movie out, especially if you're somebody who is a bit, unfortunately, is like me, where you get a bit jaded. Where you're like, oh, goody, we get to watch the same story all over again. I think this does a great job of subverting your expectations. And I'm assuming if you've listened to this far, you have seen it.
This movie is no Zombievers. Like, that's...
It is not Zombievers, no. It is severely lacking in that regard. Yeah. But definitely, highly recommend it. I thoroughly loved it. And I think... Overall, from what I've seen, 2022, last year, had a lot of great... Like, it was the first real strong horror movie year.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I think we had seen in a very, very long time. Because there's movies that we saw that we didn't cover, and obviously.
It's a lot of, like, stuff that's not... Like, remakes. Or
sequels. Yeah. Or a lot of real... It's one of the only... In a weird, ironic twist, the... Horror genre last year outside of Scream, that's not what they were doing, where everybody else was doing remakes and sequels and blah 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 what have you, or extended universe shit. Like, we were getting these very small, mostly independent or like mini major releases of stuff like The Menu or X or Pearl or like those sorts of movies, where they just sort of came out of fucking nowhere and then they like punched you in the mouth and took off running. Like, there's some really good releases out there.
And that's why it's like we wanted to do Megan, because it was something that I think is going to be a pretty good staple. And I almost feel like if this movie, if it does continue on, like, it's going to be franchise bait for sure.
It could be. It just depends on how it ends. But from what I understand, it's Child's Play with less blood. But we'll see. So that wraps it up for... The Menu. Definitely check that out.
Our first one of 23.
Yep. Which is really, really super. So stay tuned. Next week, we're going to go in the way, way back machine a little bit and cover something with a bit more cheese on it. Next week, we're doing Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, good Lord.
Upside? Hear me out. Upside, Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman.
Downside, Keanu Reeves' accent.
You know what? I'll take Keanu Reeves. Like,
But that accent, though.
Like,
it's bad. It's, you know, I don't know what it is.
What, the one thing that I do like to, like, for his accent, anytime he starts talking, I like to, like, mimic whatever he's saying, but, like, in that southern voice.
Right.
And so, like, it just makes it so much better for me, just the...
You're like, I'm having more fun this way.
Yeah.
So if you want to hear us jabber on about that, make sure you've hit that subscribe button, and we'll drop in your favorite podcatcher next Tuesday. Like, share, 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated, especially on iTunes, because algorithms are stupid. Join us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher at Creepin' It Real. You can email us with movie ideas, or if you just want to chat with Lunchbox, at creepinitreal, .cm@gmail.com. Hit up the merch, creepinitreal.redbubble.com for super sweet t-shirt, or some school supplies, or hey, they've just started introducing pet supplies like the cat mat.
Mm-hmm.
So jump on any of that as a post-Christmas treat to yourself. So until next week, when we with Dracula.
Whoa.
I'm Mr. Smeg.
I'm the good buddy Lunchbox. Sorry, I had the Keanu Reeves in there.
You just have to adjust your Keanu Reeves voice.
Oh, yeah.
And someone make me a cheeseburger, please.